Well, good morning. Hey, we've come to the end of the study in Joshua. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. It's a great book, isn't it? And it's been really, really helpful. Now, I have to say, Pat, I can only get to number one with the razor, and Mari complains when it's at number one, so I've got to sort of leave it up a bit. So if you could have a word to her, I'd like to work up to that, but I'm not too sure. Last week when we were listening to Gordon share about chapter 23, and there's a lot of similarities between chapter 23 and 24, one of the things that's quite obvious is that in chapter 23, the message was to the leadership of the people of Israel at that time, to the leadership group. But in chapter 4, the address is to the whole nation. So a great multitude of people, obviously. And in chapter 23, it's really what Joshua was saying to the people. But the first 13 or so verses in chapter 24 is what God is saying to the people. Very important distinction to keep in mind as we go through today. He's an old man now, and there is much that we can learn from older people. Colleen is one of... I was thinking, how do I describe Colleen? Because she's one of the older ones here today. And I thought, Colleen, you are our Caleb today, because Caleb was 80-odd years of age when he said, give me the mountains, when they were dividing up the land for the inheritance. And Colleen's got at least 10 or so years on Caleb, so well done, really well done. And as a church, we've been blessed over the years to have so many older people that have been significant, really significant in the life of the church. And I want to pay respect to those older people, and a number of you are here today. A number of you older ladies who have served so faithfully for so long. And we are blessed because of that. And Joshua, he's got to 110, and when you're 110, if you've still got your faculties and that with you, you can say whatever you like, because you've been around a long, long time, and he's got a lot to share with these people and a lot that we could be learning from. This morning I had a early morning phone call from Laurie. Laurie was one of the members of the church. Garth's had a call this morning. There's, others will have had a call. I don't always answer the calls, but Laurie's suffering from dementia and so on and has had to be institutionalised, which is really difficult. But you know, this morning, when Laurie rang yesterday, Mari and I couldn't understand him. But this morning, he was quite with it. He was, you could understand him, and he was right across everything. He said, Lee, you're speaking today. He said, can I pray for you? Now, I didn't answer his first call, but we were sitting having breakfast and I answered the second call, and I'm so glad I did, because he was right on the money with his prayer. And I thought, well, God bless you, Laurie. You know, as difficult as it can be sometimes, you keep getting all these calls. He just had it all connected this morning, and I thought that was great. And it just made me think about the fact that older people have so much still to give to us. Is that slide that I had, could you put that up for me? I don't know if you can read that, but you have a read of that. Today's message is really about choices. Thomas Austin in 1859, he introduced 24 rabbits onto his farm in Victoria. Not a very smart choice. The rest is history. In 1935, some smart person introduced cane toads into Queensland to address the cane beetle problem for the cane growers. Again, not an overly smart choice, because Those little cane toads, they got all the way down to Victoria, they tell me now. They're on the move and they'll take over. But when I saw that cartoon, I thought, yep, that's exactly what I think about wind farms too. And there's going to be a day, you can put it off now, Chris. There is going to be a day coming when I think people will say that was not such a smart choice to put them where we've put them and all the things we've done with them. But anyway, that's the way it goes. Choices do matter and they do have consequences. Now Shechem, which is called Nimbleus today, is in Israel, about 50 kilometres north of Jerusalem. And this is, and it's on the west bank of what we now know as Israel. It's the place where Joshua called the people to renew their covenant to be wholeheartedly committed to following God. And he had a lot to say to them. Why Shechem? Well, hundreds of years before, it was Shechem that God had called Abram's family out of idol worship and given the commitment that he would make Abram into a great nation and that they would ultimately possess what we often refer to as the Promised Land. What an extraordinary leader Joshua must have been, you know, to lead this group of people. They were nomadic people. They'd wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. They were whining and they were whinging. Not an easy task. You've got two pastors here today leading the flock. Easy task? No, it's not an easy task to lead the flock. Well, if you had those people in the desert, I can assure you it would not have been easy. They were slaves down in Egypt and they'd never owned land, and now they've come into this promised land that God had promised for them. They'd gone from sort of wilderness wanderings into this prosperous new land. And the key theme of Joshua wants the people to grasp at the close of his life is this: who will you serve? Who will you live for? But obviously we need a lot more than 1 week to deal with that in this chapter. So we'll just kind of think about a few things today. In chapter 1 to 4, they crossed the river. Maybe it took somewhere a year or so to go into the land, but they got into the land. In chapters 5 to 12, when we looked at all that study, they, under God, conquered the land. The truth is they did very little and God did a whole lot for them, but we talked about that too. And then in chapter 13 onwards, they divided up the land and received their inheritance, just as God had promised. And maybe all of that took around about 25 years to happen. In verse 1, they were gathered before the Lord, and I want to say, don't lose the importance of that. It does not get much more solemn than that. This group of people were called and gathered, and God addressed them through Joshua. He was the spokesman, but it was God addressing the people. Verse 2, the Lord, the God of Israel, addresses them directly. There's no doubt what God is after back then and now. He wants the hearts of the people. That's what he wants. He wants the hearts of his people. And the chapter falls into, say, three sections. In 1 to 13, a reminder of what God has done for them. In verse 14 through to about 27 is a call for them to decide who are they going to serve. And then 28 to 33 is a reminder that God always keeps his promises. So in 1 to 13, the reminder is they did nothing for the gracious love and care that God had provided for them. God alone poured it out on them. It was unmerited. And today, by faith in Christ alone, that is a wonderful blessing. And if you don't know him today, you can know him. And I trust you might think more about that. And we come to Joshua's challenge. I'm just conscious of the time. We come to Joshua's challenge to the people. Verse 14. Fear the Lord. And that really means just have a healthy respect for the Lord. Fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. God longs for people to serve him wholeheartedly. And that leads to one of the most well-known verses probably in the Bible. And I'm sure some of you have probably got fridge magnets at home that have the verse on it. Verse 15, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, when Paul wrote his letter to the Romans in chapter 12, verse 1, he says, now, on the basis of everything that was said in the first 11 chapters of Romans that showed they only deserve judgment, he says they should present themselves to God as living sacrifices, because that is all that God had done for them. That was their reasonable service. And we know how hard it is for the living sacrifices to stay on the altar. They tend to want to crawl off. All we deserve is God's judgment, but all we get is his love and grace. Today, as in Joshua's day, it is reasonable for a Christian to respond to God's grace by giving themselves completely to him. Verse 14, we are called to choose who we will serve. This is an exclusive commitment to God in which all others are to be excluded. Joshua's saying to the people, you cannot in one breath say that you'll serve the Lord and then you'll go on to serve pagan gods. When we've travelled through Asia and other countries, you go and you see the temples, and you've seen one temple and you've kind of seen them all, but they have these grotesque figures or Buddhas laying down or whatever they might be, but they have eyes and cannot see and they have feet that cannot walk, and yet people are sprawled all over them, worshipping them, and we have the true God of heaven to worship, and we don't take the advantages to do that, and we have to challenge ourselves about that. We say how quick the people were to forget all that God had done for them, and yet we too have many gods, just like these people did. Gods of money, gods of business, gods of pleasure. We could list a whole lot of them. Idols in any form will promise you the world, but they'll give you nothing. They'll promise you the world, but they'll give you nothing. Verse 15 says, if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourself this day who you will serve, whether it's the gods your forefathers served before the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are now living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, here's an interesting thought. It does not say that Joshua said, as for me, I will serve the Lord. He said, as for me and my house, who have the responsibility of leadership, don't lose the importance of that statement. It is your responsibility to make sure that your house and your household know what is the right way and how to serve the Lord. And Joshua was including his whole household, but taking responsibility to point them in the right direction. As leaders, we must do that. Which of the other gods will it be, says, that they can choose to serve? And Bob Dylan, back in 1979, when he became a Christian, the American songwriter, he wrote an interesting song. And it says this, but you're going to have to serve somebody, yes indeed. You're going to have to serve somebody. It may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. It was quite profound of Dylan, and it was when he just became a Christian. Wouldn't be known to the younger generation, that name, but known to a lot of us that are older, obviously. So who do you serve today? What idol is in your life that might keep you from being fully surrendered to God? Verse 16 to 20, the people respond, Joshua, you've got it all wrong. You know, far be it from us to not stop serving the Lord. Well, they've got very short memories about how they've been living. Joshua knew these people well enough to know that they had the words in their hearts, in their heads, but they did not have the word in their heart. Joshua knew that there was nothing to be gained by half-hearted responses. And in verse 21, the people respond, no, we will serve the Lord. Well, you only have to go to the next book, the book of Judges, to know that didn't last very long. It didn't last very long. They're like a yo-yo. They're up and they're down. They're up and they're down. And sadly, I have to say, so are we. That's part of our life journey. We don't want it to be that way. We want to be able to honestly say, yes, I serve the Lord, but we do have our ups and downs. Just remember how gracious God is by the way he deals with us when those things happen in our lives. How can you serve the Lord when you want to have all these other extra things added on and it's a challenge? Talk is cheap, but dedication is costly. You remember the story about the chicken and the pig that were going to, you've probably heard it, they were going to open a restaurant, and so the chicken says to the pig, we'll call it ham and eggs. And the pig said, well, hang on, for you to produce the eggs is only a momentary discomfort. But for me to produce the ham is total commitment. Now that's what God is calling for us. He wants total commitment. He wants us to give ourselves completely to him. Joshua says to them to throw away the idols. He wasn't the leader for nothing. He didn't get them through the wilderness wanderings under Moses and into the land and get them to where he is now by not knowing what was going on behind the scenes. And he knew that they had the idols still in their tents. He knew that they'd mouthed the words, but the reality would be different. And he was warning them against that, and that's how that part of the chapter finishes. And then you would wonder why it didn't finish there. Why have you got this strange little sort of add-on at the end, these six verses and three burials? Verse 29 tells us that Joshua died. Nothing about all that he's done in Egypt or in the wilderness crossings or the Jordan River or conquering the land. Doesn't say anything about names and recognition on his tombstone. What's it say about Joshua at the end of his 110 years of following God? It says he was remembered as a servant of the Lord. And I want to say to you today, that is enough. You don't need anything else. You don't need to be remembered for anything else. If you are remembered as being a servant of the Lord, that is enough, absolutely. It's a funny statement. I want to just close now thinking about Joseph for a minute. It's a funny statement about Joseph's bones. When Joseph was dying, he asked his family to make sure when he was down in Egypt, you take my bones with you when you go into the promised land. And I want them to be buried, not here in Egypt, but I want them to be buried in Shechem. Well, that was over 400 years from when God had given that original promise to Abraham to make him a great nation, to when Joseph's bones are carried up out of Egypt and they're carrying them through the desert. 400 years is a long time to hang on to a promise. Could you imagine what it must have been like? What's in the box? Joseph's bones. Who? Joseph. Remember? For the one who was a provider for us in Egypt. All the time. Imagine the testimony. We're taking them to the promised land. That's faith. And that's why Joshua was listed in Hebrews 11 as one of great faith. Joseph, rather. Why are those burials recorded at the end of the book? So that we can learn that God always keeps his word, but his timeline is maybe different to what we expect. But he always keeps his promises. Always. That's grace. That's amazing grace, isn't it? That's what inspired John Newton when he was a slave trader in the 1700s to write that hymn, Amazing Grace. How can it be that saved the wretch like me? That's the grace that God's poured out. Do you believe that this week? We had two funerals, one here in Melbourne for our friend Heather and another in Queensland that we didn't attend, but that was for Charles Gray. Now, both of these people belong to Jesus, and now they are with the Lord. There is no doubt about that. And John 14, Jesus himself gives assurance to the people that he is preparing a place for them. And these people knew that. They knew that promise, and they'd hung on to that promise. Are you sure if you were to die today, would you have the same assurance that Heather had, the same assurance that Charles had, the same assurance that Jesus is preparing a home for you? Let me say that Charles had been ill for a long time, and he was an older man. And a friend of mine rang me last Sunday morning and they said, Chuck has died. He beat us to heaven. But that's the truth. Isn't that wonderful to have that assurance? Chuck died, but he's beaten us to heaven. But we'll meet again one day. And then Heather had no idea that she was going to die. She'd had some illness. She'd been given the all clear. And 2 weeks later, she was dead. It came back with a vengeance and took her. Her husband said he didn't expect her to die before him. He expected her to go first. None of us know when we will die. None of us know what the future holds other than what the Word of God tells us, and our confidence can be placed in him. So Joshua's call echoes through the centuries. Choose for yourself today who you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. It's not just an historical event, but it's an invitation to us all right now. God has done it all. He has rescued us in Christ. He has given us new life. And now it's up to us to respond, not with a half-hearted response, but with a wholehearted response. So let me ask you today, are you living in the grace of God or trying to earn his favour? Are you following Jesus with your whole heart, or are the idols still creeping in? Are you passing on a legacy, or are you letting it fade? Let's throw away the idols. Let's renew our hearts. Let's remember what God has done and say with courage and conviction, as for me and my house, I will serve the Lord.